As you look back over your life, I'm sure you can identify certain things that you hear a lot about these days, but that you never heard of in the past. And your age will determine how many things are like that. Some of us never heard of global warming. We never heard of social media. And now we hear about it all the time. For me, one example would be the Aurora Borealis, or the Northern Lights, as it's commonly called. Growing up, I never knew such a thing existed. Never heard of it. Until, that is, I moved to live in the north of Scotland and saw it for myself. Whereas today, it's a topic that's talked about a lot. It's something that's on a lot of people's bucket lists. And there are even some people who are going their holidays to some remote holiday destination for the sole purpose of seeing the Northern Lights. Hands up if you've seen it. Oh, a few, not very many. Perhaps you need to book up on one of those holidays. And the reason some places are better than others to see it is because you need to be somewhere that is dark. You need to be somewhere that's dark. And on hearing that, you may be thinking to yourself, that's not a problem. Not a problem at all. It's dark here every night from 11 to 5 a.m. And in the winter, it's darker for longer. But although we think it's dark every night, it's never really dark. Because of street lightning and because of the moon and so on, there's always a certain amount of light, even at night. And that is why if you go out a walk at night, in the dark, you can usually still see enough to find your way. One of the few occasions that I've experienced what I would call was complete darkness was when we went down a disused coal mine in South Wales. And we were asked to switch off our head torches. That was darkness, the likes of which I had never known before. And that is the sort of darkness that this man at the beginning of John chapter 9 would have experienced his entire life. Not because he lived down a disused coal mine, but because he had been born blind. Having been born blind, he lived his entire life in darkness. That is, until his encounter with the light of the world. And as this chapter unfolds, we see two things happening. The first of those being the blind receiving their sight. The blind receiving their sight. As Jesus and his disciples were walking along one day, they came across a man who had been blind from birth. On seeing him, his disciples asked Jesus, "Rabbi," they said, "who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Now, that was a common response to suffering in those days, and it can still be today. We see someone suffering, and we automatically assume that they must have done something wrong in the past to deserve that. Who sinned? This man or his parents? Now, let me be clear. The reason there is such a thing as suffering in this world is because of sin. God created a perfect world which was free of suffering of every description, and it is only as a result of man's rebellion against his creator that suffering has become a feature of life in this world. And so there is a sense in which suffering is the consequence of sin. But that does not mean that each and every instance of suffering is the direct consequence of a particular sin. And so the disciples were wrong on this occasion, as were Job's friends many years previously. They were wrong to assume that this man's blindness was the result of some particular sin, either on his part or on the part of his parents. We cannot draw that tight connection between suffering and sin. Instead, says Jesus in verse 3, this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. And what sort of divine work is that going to be? It's going to be the work of giving sight to the blind. And so we read in verse 6 that Jesus spat on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. Jesus then told him to go and wash in the pool of Siloam, and having done so, he came home that day seeing. Can you imagine the transformation in that man's life? His entire life has been lived in darkness. And all of a sudden, there is light. And he can see. He can see what's going on all around him. Can you imagine the response of family and friends who had known that man for a long time? They struggled to believe that someone who had been blind from birth, they struggled to believe it, that this man could now see. And so, for example, some said, verse 8, isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg? Some claimed that it was, while others said, no, he only looks like him. It was never heard of that a man born blind would end up seeing. But, end of verse 9, he himself insisted, I am the man. And so the question was obviously, the next question was pretty obvious. How were your eyes opened? He replied, the man they called Jesus made some mud, put it on my eyes. He told me to go and wash. So I did. And then I could see. You would have thought that everyone would have been thrilled over this man receiving his sight, would you not? And yet, sadly, there were some people that day who were not over the moon about it. And amongst them were the Pharisees. Because the healing happened on the Sabbath, they are far from happy and far from convinced. Verse 18 tells us the Jews still did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight. And so they sent for the man's parents. Is this your son? They asked. Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that he can now see? Well, we know he is our son, the parents answered. And we know he was born blind. But how he can see now, or who opened his eyes, we don't know. Ask him. Ask him. He's old enough, you know. He can speak for himself. So ask him. And so they bring him in again. And on asking him a second time, here is reply, verse 25. One thing I do know. There's a lot of things I don't know, said the man. But one thing I do know, I was blind, but now see. On the testimony of the man himself, and on the testimony of the parents, what closer testimonies could you possibly get? What more valid testimonies could you possibly get? On the basis of their testimony, we can say that here was an occasion when the blind have undeniably and miraculously received their sight. But, as I said last week, the miracles of Jesus were not an end in themselves. Instead, they were a sign which pointed to an even greater reality. They were a signpost that pointed to an even greater truth, usually a truth about Jesus. And on this occasion, this miracle is pointing to the fact that being the light of the world, as he himself claims in verse 5, being the light of the world, Jesus is the one who can take people from a world of darkness to light. He is the one who can give sight to the blind. Not only in a physical sense, but also in a spiritual sense. Did you notice as we read through this chapter, did you notice that there are two miracles taking place during the course of this chapter? Did you notice that? Two miracles. This man has received his sight in two senses. In two ways. Yes, the first six verses record the miracle of him receiving his physical sight. But then the rest of the chapter records the miracle. And it's no less a miracle. The miracle of him receiving his spiritual sight. And in particular, his ability to see who Jesus is. For example, when the man was first asked about the receiving of his sight, he simply said, "The man they call Jesus." That's all he's got to say about him. The man they call Jesus. But then on hearing that the miracle has occurred on the Sabbath, the Pharisees insist that the person who did it could not possibly come from God, verse 16, but others question how a sinner could possibly perform such a miraculous sign. And on hearing that discussion, the man obviously started to think about who it is. What kind of person is this that could possibly have done such a great thing? And so he's coming to the conclusion that this man that they call Jesus must be someone special. And so he says of Jesus in verse 17, he is a prophet. By the time he gets to verse 33, he says, if this man were not from God, he could do nothing. When Jesus finally meets up with the man again, Jesus asks him in verse 35, do you believe in the Son of Man? Who is he, sir? The man asked, tell me so that I may believe in him. And Jesus says, you now see him. In fact, he's the one that's speaking to you. And in response, the man said to Jesus, Lord, I believe. And he worships him. Having initially referred in verse 11 to Jesus as the man they call Jesus, by the end of the chapter, he's acknowledging that Jesus is the Son of Man, a title that identifies Jesus not only as being special, but as being divine. And that is why he then proceeds to worship him. And so by the end of the chapter, he has had his eyes opened in two ways, both physically and spiritually. His encounter with the light of the world, verse 5, has led to him seeing. Not only seeing what is going on around him, but more importantly, it has led to him seeing who Jesus is. That is the blind receiving their sight. And it's great news for us today. Because did you know? Sin has not only resulted in us experiencing suffering in this world, it has also led to us being spiritually blind. Sin has blinded us. The result being that although we may enjoy good physical sight, we do not by nature possess spiritual sight. We are by nature spiritually blinded people. And you may be thinking to yourself, what on earth does that mean? I went to Bootsy's the other day, you might be thinking to yourself, for my routine eye test, and they said your sight is spot on. And here is this preacher now telling me a few days later that I'm blind. What on earth is he talking about? Well, if you want to know what spiritual blindness looks in practice, if you want to know what the symptoms of spiritual blindness are, then just look at how it is demonstrated in this chapter, demonstrated by the Pharisees. Although being extremely religious people, you would have thought if anybody could see it was them, but no. Although being extremely religious people, they were spiritually blind people, and that was demonstrated in two ways in this chapter. Firstly, it was demonstrated by the fact that they failed to see themselves as they really were. That is why they say to the man in verse 34, "You were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us?" They evidently thought that they were inherently better than he was. They thought they were a cut above the rest. They assumed that while there were terrible sinners out there in society, hey, not them boys, they were perfectly all right as they were, thank you very much. They failed to see themselves as they really were. And secondly, the other symptom of their blindness is that time and time again throughout this chapter, they demonstrate that they cannot see who Jesus is. Fail to see themselves as they really are. Fail to see who Jesus is. Two symptoms of spiritual blindness in the case of these Pharisees, and they're not an isolated case. For example, as you read through the four Gospels, you repeatedly read of Jesus encountering two major obstacles to his teaching. Two major obstacles in the response of those that he's teaching. Firstly, there is the people who thought they were perfectly okay as they were and therefore didn't need him. And secondly, there was the people who couldn't figure out who Jesus really is. Both of those responses to Jesus were symptoms of the people's spiritual blindness back then. And both of those responses continue to be symptoms of people's spiritual blindness today. Are those responses, are those symptoms that you can relate to this morning? I'm not asking what they said at Bootsy's. I'm asking, do you have symptoms of spiritual blindness? For example, as you look back over your life, and as you look at your life today, how would you rate it? How would you rate it in terms of your moral and ethical performance? Would you describe yourself as someone who is essentially good? Or would you describe yourself as someone who is essentially, at the very core of your being, bad? When you hear the word sinner, what sort of people spring to your mind? I'm sure you do think of someone. Who is it? On hearing that word, do you think to yourself, yes, I know people who fall into that category. People in my street. You know, if you knew the neighbours that I've got, perhaps people in my workplace, and certainly people in my local prison. So I know people who fit that category, but thankfully I'm not one of them. Although you probably don't consider yourself to be perfect, you do consider yourself to be essentially good, good in comparison to a lot of other people, and therefore you're hoping and assuming good enough for God. That is how the Pharisees saw themselves. And if that is how you see yourself this morning, then can I say as clearly and as compassionately as I possibly can, you're not seeing yourself as you really are. You're not seeing yourself as others around you and probably those closest to you see you. And you're certainly not seeing yourself as God sees you. And your inability to see yourself as you really are, is not due to a lack of self-awareness on your part. Instead, it is due to a spiritual blindness that characterizes all men and women. Another way in which that blindness manifests itself is in our understanding of who Jesus really is and what he came to do. And so if you were asked for your opinion of Jesus this morning, how would you describe him? Would you acknowledge that, yes, he's been a historical figure in the dim and distant past of our world? We cannot deny that. But it's so long ago that, well, I would have to say that he's now a complete irrelevance. Or would you say that he was such a good man in our history that he does continue to be of relevance today in that he provides us with a good moral example to follow? And would you say that providing us with such a moral example is essentially why he came into this world 2,000 years ago? If those are the sort of things that you would say about Jesus, and if that is all you could say about Jesus, then once again, can I say clearly and compassionately, you have never understood who Jesus is or why he came. And the reason you don't is not because of a lack of education. It's not because you didn't study at Bangor University. And it's not because of too much education. It's not because you're so clever now that I'm not as naive as to believe that kind of thing. No. Instead, it's due to a spiritual blindness that characterizes all men and women. It's the sort of blindness that the Apostle Paul was describing in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4 when he said this. He said, "The God of this age has blinded the minds of unbelievers so that they cannot see the light of the glory of the gospel of Christ, who is the image of God." That is the blindness that characterizes our lives. That is the darkness that sin has brought us into. And yet, the great news this morning, as recorded for us in John chapter 9, is that there has been someone in the history of our world who could rightfully claim, verse 5, to be the light of the world. And being the light of the world, Jesus is able to take blind people like you and me from darkness to light. He's able to do so because, as we have seen this morning, he is able to give sight to the blind. And therefore, if you want to see yourself as you really are, and if you want to see Jesus as he really is, then can I encourage you to do what this man in John 9 did? And that is come to Jesus and believe in him and trust in him. Believe him to be the Son of Man, the Christ, the Son of God. Believe in him and trust in him to be the divine person that he claimed to be. And in doing so, you will know the miracle that this man experienced, and that is the miracle of the blind receiving their sight. That is one thing we see in John chapter 9. The blind receiving their sight. The second thing we see in the chapter is those who think they can see being blinded. Those who think they can see being blinded. Now, as you probably know from experience,